Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jay Young Show. I promised you more episodes. Here we are. We're going to have a lot more episodes, but it's going to be this is going to be one of the best because it's a guy that out of Canada. He's going to talk about technologies in the oil and gas space. I know we think about what's all there is to know about oil and gas. And I thought, Jay, we just go drill wells. You get money, you go drill wells. And what happens? There's so much about technology and being under the ground 3, 4, 5 miles when it's kind of dark down there is one thing, but also after you produce a well, the technology is just mind blowing, and we can see so many different applications and software and different ways to monitor things. So, without further ado, let me introduce Andrew Richard, who is the co-founder of Automated Rig Technologies. So welcome to the show, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Jay. It's great to be on here and talk about tech.
Hey, absolutely. That's something that you may be talking about yourself a little bit, because I'm not sure how much of that I'm going to be able to follow, but just talking to third grade level, we'll be right there. But what's the biggest change for technology the last, say, 10 years or so?
And just to kind of frame where I'm coming from, we're a manufacturer and engineering innovator in the upstream oil and gas space. So our client base is the drilling guys, the well completion guys, the well service guys. Mm-hmm. So those oil field services that are boots on the ground, actually drilling for the oil and gas or producing the oil and gas. So I'm going to stretch it back even further than 10 years. This is a hot button issue always in our industry, but probably in the last 30 years, the biggest innovation in the upstream oil and gas space is the top drive, moving from a rotary table to a machine that can rotate the tubing and drill string above the floor while it's pushing down and while it's being pulled down sometimes, and while it's back reaming and pulling up and rotating. That's made a massive shift in our ability. And then, of course, rotary steerables always come up, and then we get into some of the bit technology. But those all interplay. And then overlay software on top of that, and guys are drilling wells, 32,000 feet in a couple of two, three weeks.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's amazing. So the big difference for the layman talking about a top drive, it sits on top of the rig and it rotates the drill string, so you're able to drill faster. It's lubricated, and all of a sudden you can drill. How much faster would a top drive be than a non top drive?
Oh, listen, I've been in the industry for 25 years, and the first time it's actually shameful. The first time I'd ever seen a rig with a Kelly and a rotary table was probably like 2005 or 6 on a West Texas rig. Everything else prior to that was all top drive and wrenches and, you know, iron roughnecks and things like that. Our VP of engineering, for example, you know, he would tell us, especially in the Canadian market, they'd be drilling a lot of vertical wells back in the day with a rotary table. And these are wells that they were drilling that would take 3 months to drill and sometimes more. And like I mentioned earlier, we have a major client in Canada and the US, and they're drilling on the regular 25,000 foot wells with, you know, 10,000 foot vertical and 15,000 foot laterals. And they're doing them in 2 weeks or less.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's unbelievable, the efficiency.
Yeah, that is amazing, of how much faster you can drill. We drill, I don't know how many feet we'll drill this year, but anyway, we top drive is it. I mean, especially, I mean, our next well is going to be, I think we're doing a 2 mile lateral in the Wolf Camp, but yeah, same thing. I mean, man, it's a lot, and it really does help you a lot by drilling faster. It saves you money. It will cost you more money per day, but when you're in and out faster, obviously the money that you save is better. What's the difference in Canada and the United States in regards to doing business? Besides, it's a little bit colder up there than it is in Texas at 100 and something degree heat today. What's the big or do you know that? I don't even. What are the big challenges that you may have up there that we don't have?
We have breakup on a regular basis. So breakup is the freeze and the thaw, and so you're not allowed to move equipment a lot of the time. So there's a lot to that. There's bonded roads by the oil company, so they'll actually put that bond up, and then if they need equipment moving down that road, and if that road's damaged, then they end up paying for it. And that is okay to move the equipment, but a lot of the times during breakup, things pretty much stay where they're at. So they're either out on location or they're trying to get rushed back pre-breakup to the shop so that they can get any sort of work done. Because basically for those sometimes 6 weeks, whatever, 8 weeks, we can't work.
Wow.
A tremendous amount of the drilling, I don't have the actual statistic, but a tremendous amount of the drilling in Canada happens January, February, March. So that's where the bulk of the work happens for the whole year. It's an interesting thing to me because the scale, you know, Canada has a lot more oil and gas than the US. However, the scale is it's 10 times or more smaller, or sorry, 10 times less of a size than the US. Like, right. I think a lot of it's that regulatory environment with our government and the uncertainty of what the decisions might be made at those government levels on these big projects. So unfortunately, that's what our country has to deal with. And, you know, I kind of mentioned it a little bit in the intro there, we were talking, and I've heard this come up several times from my Canadian counterparts that have been deploying technology in the oil field, that Canada has really, the oil and gas companies and the operators or the OFSs in Canada have really become a lot less risk averse, right? So they a lot of the innovation that comes from Canada doesn't deploy here, unfortunately.
Okay. Good. That makes sense. Because you guys have, is it federal regulations that monitor and that keep policies? I mean, we've got Biden, we got national, we got states. Yeah. Now, Texas, I can get a permit tomorrow in Texas, pretty much, and just go drill a well. And then in Colorado, you can wait 6, 8, 9 months. So in the city, you have to go through the city sometimes, and then the state. Of course, Colorado is a different animal and Wyoming is a different animal on some of the lands that are BLM because they own so much BLM acreage, Bureau of Land Management acreage. So a different, kind of a different, twist, if you will, for trying to get permits and trying to get, is it pretty friendly? Is it pretty drill friendly, or is it?
It is provincial. Like it's, so there's two levels when, I guess on the drilling side, it's more of the, it's provincial. So Alberta, the province that I'm in, and Saskatchewan next door tend to be very pro energy, pro drilling, oil and gas. And they're the big difference though, is there, and I'm not very familiar with the actual limitations, but there are limitations by section. So like if you fly into the Permian Basin and you see, you know, you're flying into Midland and you just see well upon well upon well upon well. Canada's not like that. We're not allowed to put wells that close together. There are that's not to say that there aren't pads. There are a lot of pad wells.
Yeah.
But you just don't see the same kind of, just the same scale of wells up here as you do down there.
Right.
And then federally, when energy is transferred from state or province to province, so if we're doing pipelines or anything like that, that's where federally they get involved, as well as some of these LNG plants and things like that. So there's a lot of regulatory approvals that have to happen. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's been a few deals that the federal government has just kind of walked back on and canceled. So as far as I know, Shell, for example, isn't even in Canada anymore.
Oh wow.
You know,
wow.
So there's a few of the operators that just don't really want to play. You know, and Ovintiv used to have a massive amount of acreage up here. Who else? You know, and even it extends into the pipeline side. I mean, look at, is it TransCanada, I think, has changed to TC Energy, and I think they moved their head down south.
Yeah, so did Ovintiv. They moved to Denver.
Yeah.
But they bought all those Permian Basin assets, you know, so. Yeah. Hey, if you don't be in the oil and gas business, I mean, there's a really good way to do it, and there's a really good way to, I guess, not do it. But, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. We bought a deal in Colorado a couple of years ago, and we haven't been able to get a permit yet. I mean, it's like there's always something there that and it's not that exciting now, but it's like if we ever get to drill that thing, man, I really look forward to it. We're going to throw a really, really good party for that.
One thing about the Denver thing that's interesting, we have a client that's down in that area that's told us, and it just blew me away, in that DJ Basin that it's the oil company, and they said they spend approximately $1 million a month in noise pollution fees because they're getting charged with this. It's just, it's a little bit, I don't know. It's a little bit backwards. You know?
It really, really is. It's different than Texas. I mean, when you're talking about pads, you have pads where you have an area, maybe it's 5-10 acres that has 50 wells on it or something, where in Texas, you know, we just stag them every 1,320 feet or every 900. Yeah. I mean, there's like a pumping unit. And then in between there's five or six other pumping units because there's so many different formations that it's like in the oil field in Midland. If you drive out there and you land in the airport, you can turn around literally in a 360 and see 100 pumping units. And they're all different sizes because, you know, the smaller ones are for a shallower depth. It's only producing from 5,000 out of the San Andreas, where the deeper ones may go down to the Ellenberger or some other formation. But it's totally different. And I could almost say that if Midland was as beautiful as Canada, that we'd have the same deal. But we don't. So people don't care. And they just throw pumping units in their backyard and they'll throw 20 or 30 of them. That's a
good point, actually. I've driven down the street in, I think, Midland or Odessa, and I've had to, you're driving down the street and you have to jog around a jack that's sitting on the side of the road. And the big difference, I think, we don't own the mineral rights personally, when we own land, right?
Right.
So that is a big difference for us. That's all, provincially owned. We actually have a royalty structure in Alberta that a premier set up many years ago. And there's a fee for that. So if you have unexploited assets or estimated underground, then they charge you a certain amount per month or year or something like that. And then as you're extracting, that money has to go back. Some of that money has to go back, or a percentage has to go back to the province. So it really helps the province. Like we're the lowest taxed, highest, or, you know, richest province, I think, in all of Canada. So because of that.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that is a lot different than obviously the United States, but not, it's pretty much the same as other countries, Australia, New Zealand, or any others, except if you get into the other, Iran's, Iraq's, and Russia, totally different. So we won't go there on this episode. But I'd like to ask you, I got a question here. It says, from your perspective, what emerging technologies are truly revolutionizing the energy industry today? What's that big emerging technologies? Is there anything big that's going to happen?
I'm gonna be biased and talk about a technology that we're launching.
There you go. That's that's what this is for.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about the drilling side, and that's really what our industry does, Jay, is we cannibalize ourselves all the time, right? So we talk about these are all data points or discussions that I've had with people over the last several years, but if you look at the rig counts and how the rig counts have dropped, but the footage has increased, it's that that efficiency of these higher spec rigs. And you see that in the drilling side, but you don't see that in the completion space and the well servicing space. You know, you've got in both completions and well servicing spaces, you have coil tubing units, you have snubbing jacks, and you have workover slash well service rigs. And arguably, maybe the coil tubing unit is the newest technology, you know, maybe 30, 35 years old or something. I don't, it goes back further than that, but really the wider spread deployment of that is about that old. And then you look at a well servicing rig that hasn't changed in, I don't know, 80, 90 years, and a snubbing jack was developed in the 50s, 60s, and they haven't changed dramatically. There's improvements that have been made, but by and by, snubbing and well servicing have are completely manual, and coil tubing only has so much reach. So our biggest, what we're seeing the biggest innovation for ourselves, you know, what we believe is this jointed pipe injector, or this is what I've got up on the board here. I used to have 3D prints here at my desk. I don't have them with me right now, but the jointed pipe injector is an injector that walks over drill joints, upsets and couplings on jointed pipe. So it acts just like a coil tubing unit. So it can push or pull in and out of the well, and it never, it only moves in one direction. So the reason why we think that's one of the biggest innovations is because, and it's this very simple concept, that you're no longer transferring load. When you have a normal drilling rig, Jay, if you and I are standing on the rig and we're on a well servicing rig or we're on a drilling rig, one operator is moving the blocks up and down and transferring load between the elevators and the slips on the floor. And on a, same thing on a well servicing rig. On a snubbing jack, you and I would be standing, what, 30, 40, 50 feet in the air, and we're sitting on a we're standing on a basket that's, you know, 10 feet by 10 feet. We've got four guys up there. There's a jack plate that's basically like a rotary table. That's exactly what it is. It's a rotating rotary table that just happens to move, and it will hold the pipe from falling down the well, or it will hold the pipe from ejecting out of the well when there's pressure. And that's a completely manual process as well. So moving into or out of the well, if you can do a 10-foot grab with a snubbing jack, is 17 manual movements. And that doesn't take into consideration any of the pressure equipment. With the jointed pipe injector, it's one. So we reduce, we're reducing with that technology the transfer of load beyond 94%, you know, of the time. So the risk is dramatically lowered for operators and for oil companies. And that technology enables a whole level of automation that hasn't been able to be realized in that space because everything's manual.
Yeah, I got you. So what does automated rig technologies, what do you guys, I mean, what are your revenues, and what did you make revenues from last year? What specifically, before we go any further deep into this, what tell me about you guys a little more.
Yeah, so our company started in actually in my basement in 2009-10 after we had come off the sale of a company called Iron Derrickman to Weatherford. And so sold that company, and there was something really special about the fact that that company existed. We had, I think we grew to 50 some odd people. We had everybody working on one product. We had a few projects, but on the side from historic clients, but we had one real product and everybody was moving in that same direction. So when we started this company, we took a lot of the, didn't take, but a lot of the people had kind of decided to move on and get back into the consulting gig. So we put all of our group that had really founded that company back together with the intent of just being an engineering consulting business for the upstream oil and gas space. One of our largest clients basically said that well, demanded that we open up a shop in Edmonton. I'm based in Calgary, Alberta, but we now have a shop in Edmonton. And so we opened up this shop in Edmonton, and we started servicing their equipment. And we had this, in hindsight, not a great business model, because our business model, we had up to 2015, we had five major clients. And we just serviced the hell out of them. It was sort of that 80-20 rule. Like, 80% of your clients, or 20% of your clients pay 80% of your revenue, and, all that sort of stuff. So we focused very heavily on innovations for those five clients, and they didn't overlap in the industry. So we had a manufacturer, we had an OFS, we had, a drilling company, we had a variety of people that we were providing solutions for. But when 2015 hit and everything crashed, well, so did all of our clients, right? I think we had 15 rigs on order for one client, and we had finished two of them, and 13 got canceled. So it was pretty devastating. At that point, we were finishing off a project for one of the major offshore companies. It was an engineering project, and our team decided to really take the ideation around that from offshore and see if we could apply it to land. And that's really where the JPI came from. So our company really is, the bones of our company is a group of upstream experts. I've been in the industry for 25 years, and I've got the least amount of experience.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Our VP of engineering, Harold Miller, he worked on drilling rigs for 10 years before he became an engineer. Very, very practical people. And so we're on one area, we could be classified as like a boutique engineering solutions firm that brings solutions to the market for our clients. And then on the other side, we innovate in certain spaces in the industry, and we bring those technologies to market by ourselves. So kind of those two paths. Sometimes we'll work with clients so that they can patent equipment, and sometimes we will, like the JPI, we'll bring that to market by ourselves and patent.
I got you. So what do you think the Canadian oil production is per day? Any idea? Production?
Wow. I should know that.
Well, I'm just trying to think, comparatively speaking to the United States, is it, because you did say something about it's more on tap because there's more drilling restrictions, or both weather and everything else. I was wondering how big is Canada, and is there as many oil and gas companies there as there is here in the United States? Because there's a lot here, obviously.
Yeah, so I just did a quick Google search. So 2021, it says that we did about 5.5 million barrels a day. I'm assuming that it dropped pretty heavily in 2022, and then it's probably coming back up into that area.
Okay.
Nowhere near the same number of oil companies up here as there are down there. What does that give us? You guys are about 10
12, million. About 12 million, 12, 12 and a half right now. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And the question you asked about some of the revenue before, like, well, from a revenue perspective, we're private, so we don't disclose that. But most of our work, I would say 70% of our work is international. So we're not tied into just the Canadian market. Very little of what we do is actually Canadian.
Okay, that's good. I was wondering, because one of your clients said that they wanted to have an office in Edmonton. You're in Calgary, and I'm like, okay, so does this, are we looking at only Canadian investors? So what, I'm an oil and gas company, we drill wells. What would you try to sell me if you were talking to me? What would be your first, maybe try to sell me the JPI. I don't know what it stands for, besides
jointed pipe projector is what it is.
Okay.
Sorry. So I guess I got a few questions for you then.
Okay.
Are we talking about drilling, or are we talking about completions, or are we talking about production, and where are you having your biggest problems?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we have problems everywhere, right? Just like everybody. So what you sell more drill? You said drilling completions or production? Let's just say production. We have some production problems right now. We have a lot of wells spread out that aren't doing very much, and 20 MCF a day or 5 barrels a day. Is that what you're looking at, or are you looking at?
More about the equipment. So there's two things. So on the production side, back in 2015, when everything sort of crashed, we got aggressive. So we bought a company called C-Tech Design and Manufacturing, and we wrapped all those products into our suite. So in the production space, a lot of what we do has to do with rod lift. So if you're dealing with a lot of heavy oil, that's where the continuous rod stuff works really well. There's other, you know, long deviated wells and blah blah blah. There's reasons why you would do continuous rod. So we sell continuous rod injectors, continuous rod welders, reels, all the things to get that rod out to market. And there's a lot of benefits of continuous rod versus jointed rod. One being that there are no connections, you know, really from top to bottom, it's the top and the bottom connection. The load on the side of the tubing string, you know, the internal production tubing, is a lot less. You don't have a point load like you do on a coupling when your surface pump is moving up and down. And you get a higher flow because you don't have the restrictions of your couplings and upsets on your sucker rod. And then, so that's one component on the production side. And then we have another technology that we've patented and sell and support. And that's a circumferential displacement tong. And it's in order to correctly make up sucker rods, what you're supposed to do, because it's a shouldered connection, you're supposed to thread up the connection to shoulder. So it's somewhat tight, about 50 to 70 foot-pounds. I can't remember exactly what it is. And then you card it. So you draw a line, two lines at a specified distance, and you move the top line to the bottom line, and that's circumferential displacement to tension the threads. So if you're, that's the API recommended makeup practice for sucker rods. And if you follow that, you'll have a longer distance, let's call it, or more time between failures of that rod string. And so that sucker rod tong is the only commercial sucker rod tong in the market that we know of that correctly makes up rods to API recommended practices. So that's that part. And then just moving, I guess, because you asked about the jointed pipe injector, there's a really simple value proposition statement. So we reduce emissions by over 30%, and we can back up all these numbers. We increase speed by 1.8 times entering or exiting the well. We reduce personnel by 33%, and we reduce operator risk by over 94%.
Wow. That's great.
Good.
Very good. If you get it faster and cheaper,
yeah.
I mean, what? No brainer, right? That's good.
Well, and it's comparable in cost to the existing equipment in the market.
Right. Right. Awesome. That's good. Good. Okay. Well, hey, I want to know about the challenges and the opportunities in the energy space. What are your? I know Biden cut off the Keystone pipeline up there for you guys and kind of made a few people, I guess, hopefully made somebody happy, because I know one company that was like lost $4 billion in that $8 billion. They were going to spend $8 billion. They already spent $4 of that, and Biden came in just with a stroke of a pen, you know, did away with it, and it was very well needed. Pipelines, just to let some of the listeners know, you know, pipelines for oil and gas production and transportation is so much better if you have a pipeline in the ground, because then you don't have to have people going by the well every day, and you don't have to have the trucks going by to pick it up and taking it to the refinery. I mean, it's all in a pipeline. It is so much easier, and I don't think that was necessarily I think that was Joe Biden just going, I told you I was going to do it, and I did it, and he didn't think about anything else other than that, obviously, and not a very good decision. But anyway, We're talking to Andrew Richard, Automated Rig Technologies. What are some of your pluses and minuses, positive, negatives? What energy business going? Let's say the next, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years. What do you see? What do you see in the industry?
That's a good question. So being, let's call it, on the lowest end of the totem pole in the market, because we're a manufacturer / innovator and R&D kind of shop, funds haven't really been around since before 2015, like heavily developed on the development side. But what we're starting to see, I think I'm fully on board with your political views, but the thing that's interesting that I've seen, and from my last few trips to Houston, this windfall tax that Biden's put on any company, I think, that is making more than $1 billion in profit, that above that range, you start getting taxed at some exorbitant rate. What I'm starting to see that do, and I've been hearing that a lot of the oil companies are starting to all of a sudden find money for development.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it's coming from. So instead of paying tax on money on all of this, what they're planning to do, what seems like they're planning to do, is double down and reinvest in this energy space. And that's fantastic.
Right.
It's really, really good for what we do. And I think it's really good for the industry, just with the absolute the horrible lack of investment back into our industry.
Right.
You know, just sort of the pros and cons you're asking about. Again, these are all numbers that I'm good at remembering sort of the gist of things, but not exactly the numbers. But I think one of the fellows that I talk to on a regular basis up here was telling me back in the day, pre-2015, Canada was doing whatever, $250 billion, right, in revenue just around the oil and gas sector. And 50% of that was returning to the bid or something like that. Like, it's some ratio like that. And now it's more like we're back at that number of 250 billion, but we're only returning 20% to the bid.
Wow.
So I think that's, and don't quote me exactly on the numbers, but just generally, that's the sort of gist that I understood from my previous discussions with the industry. But
well, I can see that. I can see that, yeah. 100%. People, United States is the same way. And as you know, I mean, we're making so much money here, but it's not going back to drilling. Our rig count's not even close to where it was before the pandemic at 1,200 so rigs. It's 700 today. We're not even back there yet because companies are making so much money, but the politicals and Biden's telling everybody that, you know, we're going, we don't need oil ever again. You know, buying back shares, giving back money to clients. I mean, there's all of it, but what they're not doing is putting it back in the ground. Which, hey, I know I agree with Joe Biden one time in my life. Not that I'm a big Trump fan. I'm just saying that I did agree with him, and I've come out with that politically, publicly, that I said, hey, I did agree with Biden's plan, because companies, when they're making billions and billions of dollars in the past, and I've seen, I'm 60 years old, I've seen a tremendous amount of spikes in this industry. And every time companies make money, they put it back in the ground, like you're 50%. But
yeah,
this time they're not. And that's when we're going to have a huge problem with these oil and gas prices in the future, because I don't believe our demand is going to go down anytime soon, and especially not at the rate that we're stopping drilling. You know, so I think we're in for some higher oil and gas prices in the future because of that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah, that's, you know, there was a number. I was in Dubai a couple of years ago, I want to say 2021, for the annual technical conference and exhibition, the SPE one. And there was a great talk about the world financial, like the numbers worldwide on what was invested in oil and gas. And they had about, again, from memory and numbers and all the things, I think they said somewhere around 400 $400 billion deficit in the investment in the oil and gas space. So they said we needed about $2.5 trillion worth of investment on an ongoing basis, and we were about 2.1. And so they were, that's what they were forecasting over the next couple years, was that we were going to have a massive increase in oil prices because of that.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. That's, I mean, people aren't going back, obviously, and it's in the numbers of drilling rigs going back. But I do know, and I read this article the other day, which is really interesting, Andrew, is about, you know, wells are being drilled so much further these days. Yep. And even though there's less rigs in the Haynesville is giving up more gas because instead of drilling, and I mean, this is kind of stupid, who wouldn't know this, but instead of drilling a ton of vertical wells, now we're drilling half as many horizontals, and our and the productions are something stupid like that, but it is a significant amount of gas that's coming out of the Haynesville, which is a lot more with less rigs.
Well, you look at EQT, I mean, that's what they focused on drilling, what was it, 4,000 or 5,000 foot longer laterals than everybody else,
right,
in their area, and they're just, and they're the largest natural gas producer in North America,
right exactly,
you know,
exactly.
So that's been a, it's been a big thing, and that's sort of the market we've been focusing heavily on with the JPI, is that right there.
Right.
That's, you know, being able to get out to 32,000 foot, you can't do it with coil tubing in it.
Right.
It's, it just doesn't exist, you know.
Right. Well, hey, let's wrap up. But in the meantime, yep, tell me one last big old hurrah for your company, Automated Rig Technologies, Andrew. Tell me one, is there anything, do you have a mission statement, a vision, what, tell me one big thing about your company, then let's wrap it up. So what, is there anything out there? Where do we find you?
Yep.
Who needs to find you? We need discounts on the Jay Young Show, man.
Yeah. Discounts. Yeah, we'll paint it whatever color you need it.
There you go. That's a discount.
To find us, the best place to find us are our website, so automatedrig.com, which is AutomatedRig.com. My name, Andrew Richard, or if we're talking Louisiana, Richard. spelt like Richard. And find me on LinkedIn. I'm fairly active on a monthly cycle kind of way. My thing from being really, really young actually, and being exposed to the oil and gas industry, was instead of being like a full mission statement, I always thought we'd be creating transformers for drilling rigs, right? And make the noise and the whole nine yards and have this thing fold out, go drill a well without anybody there. But then you start realizing, as you've been in the industry for longer, that really what we need to get to is you have a guy and a dog, and the guy's there to feed the dog, and the dog's there to make sure the guy doesn't touch anything. So that's our ultimate goal in the drilling industry, is really just that automation and one button, fully automated tripping.
Right. That's great. And I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, I'm a fourth generation guy, and I've been around this business for a long time. It still amazes me, and things change. It's like the Permian Basin, which it, you know, recreated itself many, many times over. It'll continue to do so, with refracts and drilling further and the whole nine yards. But Andrew, I'll tell you, it's been a real big pleasure having you on, and I want to have you back on again. And I appreciate you being here so much, and wish you all the best and your Automated Rig Technologies and getting out to many different people. So thank you very much for being on. And everybody, thank you for being here today, the Jay Young Show. You'll learn a lot about this. There's things that you want to know. There's things that are interesting. You know, be sure and subscribe below, but also to, you know, ask me questions or come back in and say, hey, Jay, I want to hear more about Automated Rig Technologies, or who do I talk to? How do I get in touch with these people? Well, be sure and ask me, and then let's ask me who your next person. Maybe it's the competitor of Automated Rig Technology. No, we're not going to do that to you. But anybody else that you want to have on the show, please tell us. So thank you very much, everybody, for watching this. And thanks, Andrew, for you being on. So thank you.
Really appreciate it, Jay. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you.